Hello and welcome to Season 3, Episode 9 of the D-Hoop University Podcast. This is your boy, Daryl Harris, also known as D-Hoopster, here to talk about what's going on in the world of hoops, as there is less than about 30 days in the NBA season. There's also less than 30 days until WrestleMania. If you'll look with me over my right shoulder, you'll see some repurposed house decorations with my own countdown to WrestleMania here in Las Vegas. It's a middle of March Madness. It is almost, it's actually springtime. So a lot of change. This is a real transient part of the year that doesn't feel like it if you're tapped into this podcast, because things are honestly peaking. You know what else is coming on right now? Coming up, I gotta pull the day up. I shouldn't have this. This is like a second birthday. But the podiversary is upon us just about as well. This will be year 3 of the pod officially. Pod will turn 3, and it's been a quick 3 years. Salute, man. That definitely makes me happy to say and to have rode the journey up until now and have so much to look forward to still. 100%. So, you know, 3 years is a testament to what I said from the beginning when launching this podcast, is that I would see it through. And that to me is something that can differentiate quality podcast material. I've said this for a long time, that this is a passion project. It's not just because there's nothing else to do, but this is an investment, man. It's an investment, and there's a purpose behind it, and a lot of pods come and go, but I'm happy to say that year 3 is upon us in a matter of days as well, and it was such a good time to launch it. And shout out to Shiv, man. Shiv gets the first shout out. Didn't write any shout outs down, but definitely shout out to Shiv, who is on the grind right now, but jumped in with me. And we said, yo, it's playoffs. It's time to lock in. And here we are, man. The playoffs are within earshot. I feel like there's some ground to cover and some makeup to do. And there's no better way to do that here at D-Hoop University than with who's hooping. Who is hooping? That is a segment where we get to, it's self-explanatory. It's not too complicated. It could be 5 minutes. It could be the whole pod sometimes. Who's hooping? You know, let's talk about it, because that requires you to elaborate a little bit. It's easy to have an opinion. It becomes more layered when you can support that opinion with things that you have observed and genuinely taken note of. And who's hooping is a earned, it's a badge. I'm starting to really like this thing, man, because we've hit some, dude. Evan Mobley, Dyson Daniels. Like, if you get a who's hooping badge, Cage was one of the first ones. Garland was one of the first ones. Amen Thompson. Like, we don't just pass these out to anybody. You know what I'm saying? This is like a Rockefeller chain. This is a Letterman jacket, if you will. This is the Letterman jacket. I'm on a whole tangent right now on the pod. But you get the point, right? Who's hooping, man? And I have to weave in some of the most recent work that I've done online. And I got to mention this fool, Josh Giddey. Polarizing young brother, you know? I just wrote a story that talks about Josh Giddey that was very timely in the Bulls at large, because the Bulls have evolved in real time. And are playing some good ball right now, could very well make their way into the postseason, and is almost a lock right now for the play-in tournament. And you look back at the Josh Giddey deal, and you're like, whoa, it was Josh Giddey for Alex Caruso straight up. And then you look at the timing of it, and it was the last week of June. The finals had barely wrapped up. This was like when the Knicks had traded for Bridges, right? They traded for Bridges first, I believe. And it's like, somebody wants to make a splash, you know? Somebody's being aggressive. And Oklahoma City made that deal as well before the draft even. And it was one of those situations where they seemed pretty ready to come off of him. And we all know why that might be. There's no need to bring up or reference what it is on here because the brother's clear. He's now on a new team. And this was the lead into the article. And I'm just go ahead and read it, you know, do it that way because this is a story that I have wanted to do for a couple weeks. And I thought that the timing of it coming after this Lakers victory where this dude went crazy, almost had a quadruple double, I honestly worked into his favor a little bit better. But last summer, the Chicago Bulls made one of the earliest offseason splashes when they acquired Josh Giddey from Oklahoma City in exchange for Alex Caruso. The Thunder valued Caruso's defense, while the Bulls added a two-way playmaker with size, still on his rookie deal. 9 months later, Chicago's return on investment is paying off. Giddey's a nightly triple-double threat. Get this, his averages are 22.3 points a game, 10.5 rebounds, and 9 assists since the All-Star break. And this is about a 10-12 game sample size, and he missed about 4 due to a sprained ankle that he came back from against the Lakers, if not the game prior. All this, meanwhile, his usage has only risen from 20-23.7%. They get to re-sign this guy for what is probably going to be one of the he's earning it right now, but the contract that he could have gotten with this level of play in Oklahoma City is it's got a few more numbers on it than it would in Chicago. So that plays in Chicago's benefit tremendously. And it's the play style, though. It's the Australian national team sort of feel that he has to his game where he's a threat to do something at all times, to do multiple things at all times. Yeah, you know, he has vision. He facilitates. He has a really good feel to kick ahead, and this activates other players. Kobe White averaged like 34 points this past week. He was Eastern Conference Player of the Week, beside a guy who's getting a triple-double almost every night. Tonight, Giddey was 26-9-7, and they got the win over the Denver Nuggets. This is just a reminder that the playoffs will not be easy. There's no easy route this year in the playoffs because one seeds are going to have to deal with some feisty squads. Like, you can mess around and catch Minnesota. I'm going on a tangent, but you can mess around and catch Minnesota in round one as the top two or three seed. That's not a treat. You're going to catch one of these Orlando-type teams. That's not going to be fun at all. It's not a walk in the park. So the league's really deep right now. And during this time of the season, you know, you realize there's still plenty to play for. And whether that is contractual, whether that is just making a dent into some progress, giving the team something to work with, that brings me to my next who's hooping. Alex Saar, second overall pick, Washington Wizards big man, who's just got game, dude. He's got game. He's, you know, I didn't have a feel for what he was or what he was supposed to be, honestly. And I did maybe think that he would be doing it this soon, coming from the draft till the final stretch of the regular season. But dude's got some chops, man. He's got a good three ball. He's above 40% from three for a couple months now. That's what multiple blocks a game. If I had to quickly, you know, research that, that's a good cross-section of players to be among. High-level rim protectors with three-point range that allow offenses to play five out. You're gonna have to support him on the boards, but he's going to get better on the boards because he's got size. He's 7'1", 7'2". And moves. This guy's got game. And Washington's really nailed a piece that allows them to relax. They get to exhale a bit and know that, hey, look, we kind of got something. And not that he is the savior, not that he will, you know, do anything single-handedly per se, but that piece, the big man that gives you spacing 1 through 5 and can also defend above the rim. It's needed. It's a 100% needed right now. And it just, yeah, it's an exhale. It's a W for the organization. It's a W for the season, if you ask me. there's guys like Keyshawn George who's really starting to hoop. I actually wrote about the Washington Wizards. I haven't given this article that much love, but let me go ahead and just pull it up while I can, because 100%, there's a silver lining happening right now in Washington. Signs of hope, I believe, is something that we went with the article headline. But you got to pay attention, man. This final quarter, not even a quarter, we are literally in like the last 100 meters or so of the regular season. For a team that's not playing for anything, I got an example. For a team that's not playing for anything, ending the season with a little bit of morale is huge. Look at Houston this season. They weren't serious last year in the West, but towards the end of the year, I had Amen Thompson in fantasy. I was watching what Ime Udoka was doing. Me and Schiff talked about it on here multiple times. Jalen Green was coming along. Fred was there. Had Shingun in fantasy. Realized that he's a stud. And the emergence of Tari Eason and Jabari Smith this year, it happens when you take games seriously. It happens when you maximize the season. That's what Houston did last year. They still got their work cut out for them this year, but the postseason is almost a lot. And that's at least what you're playing for. This Washington team, here's the example to juxtapose that. Strange, because it worked. I'll take it back. What I was going to say was the Mavericks team really sold it the last week or two of the season, I believe 2 years ago. And it was the year that they had their lottery pick only if it was in the top 10. And they were borderline for the playoffs, but they made a nice sell job with the week or two left with the lineups. And in the lottery, what do you know? They got picked 10. They skinned it out. But with that pick, they nailed it with Derek Lively, who was a reason that team got to the NBA Finals the following season. What I was going to say was, maybe I can use Philadelphia as an example, because there's a thing with getting comfortable with being subpar that does something beyond, like, look at Kuzma. Kuzma's pretty rejuvenated. He had a double-double the other night for Milwaukee. Had a pretty decent score game tonight against Phoenix, but he looks rejuvenated. He looks like a person that belongs on a playoff, that can play in a playoff game, have a game or two during a series, which he was with LA before he got shipped to Washington. For about 3-4 years, man, it was shaky, as my guy Dre the Shoe God likes to say. It was shaky for Kuz over there, and he's gotten it off. But that, I feel like it does something to you as a competitor, as an athlete, to be a part of an organization that isn't, that you could question how serious we're taking this. And that was Washington, and it looks like they've emerged. It really looks like they've emerged. I'm going to get back to them in a second. I was just going to say that Dallas, tried to say, oh, no, let's. They did a smart thing. They did a smart thing. And try to loop that into this DACA word, a mentality thing. But I'm not touching Dallas in depth until I get one of my boys on here from the Triple D, either Sean or Chuck, man. I need these guys on the pod to vent, to have a conversation. I have to do it. I can't really talk about this Dallas situation until I'm doing it with, somebody who's invested in it. So y'all will definitely get a good pop when that time comes. But I highlighted this Wizards team because, things like this can be overlooked, but there'll be a reason for a team's future success. And I was pointing out the fact that, hey, Washington nailed this rookie class. They nailed the draft. Alex Saar, Keyshawn George, Bob Carrington, those are guys that will turn into rotation players, maybe trade assets. And that's all you're really looking for. You're looking to have more hits than misses in the draft. Those are three solid players that they combined with veteran leadership in Chris Middleton and Marcus Smart. And that's really what makes this Washington team sit on the stomach a little better. They're much more digestible. It's a balanced breakfast. You know what I'm saying? They've got something healthy over there for those kids to learn, to be nurtured and developed as young men. And a further note on Sar, who is hooping. He gets the Who's Hooping badge. Like I said, we don't take this lightly. But this was coming off of the game where he set a career high, season high, his best game of the season against the Denver Nuggets when the Wizards upset the Nuggets. And it was because Sar messed around and dropped 34, five made threes, you know? He had three-pointers, four blocks. Words I put were the makings of a versatile centerpiece built for the modern era. That's good return. That's good return on pick two, which is a dangerous pick. The draft conversation and all of that is going to pick up very soon. And we'll be able to look at this rookie class some more and do this process all over again while we're talking about the draft. I'll do it because I talked up the Who's Hooping badge quite a bit. But there's levels to it. I'm just put it on the back burner. I'm going to make y'all wait. I'm going to make y'all wait for that one. Let me zag a little bit. Caleb Love. Caleb Love is hooping. And I think we got to be honest. I'm not going to get a tournament prediction out of me. I've got some gut guys. I think Florida has got the makings of going all the way. I think that, of course, Duke can go all the way. I'll have more on Duke probably in just a second. But I don't think Arizona is all the way like that. Caleb Love's a pro, dude. He's a pro. He's a lottery pick, if you ask me. And if he's not, that's cool. And let me just ease that up a little bit without being, like I said, deep into this rookie class. I think if he's in the 20s, he's going to start getting phone calls. You look at a Jeremy Cain, where completely different prospects, but I think that he's in that talent range where there are some reasons why teams might not take him with a high value pick. You might want to swing for youth, or you might want to swing for athleticism, or you might want to swing for size, or, you know, one of these hybrid guys. And that's kind of what those picks are for. You're picking for ceiling kind of at that point. But once you get past some of the just prime cut of the class, you're like, all right, who's good? Who do I think is, if not good, to just really good? Jeremy Cain was like that without college tape that would knock your socks off, but the pedigree was there for sure. And I think Caleb Love is that way. I think Caleb Love is that way. I'll create this scale. You know, Jaden Ivey, people fell in love with despite certain possible drawbacks, whether that's size or, you know, I guess that's the primary one. Because I think he's a baller. I think he's a hooper. I support Jaden Ivey. But everybody wasn't sold. You know, jumpers coming around. Jumper's there, though. It's there. The athleticism, the finishing ability is ridiculous. But because of that rare athleticism, he was viewed as a top five kind of guy. And I think he ended up going fourth or so to Detroit. Maybe sixth at the latest. But Jeremy Cain, you know, after the lottery, because we don't see that flashiness. It's in his game, but we don't see that something that is really eye-popping. Caleb Love, I think, is right in the middle, because there's some stuff where I'm seeing now that I'm kind of like, yo, hold on, how tall is he again? Like, is he taller than Donovan Mitchell? Because if so, this translates. I don't think my eyes are deceiving me. That's some of the Ace Bailey conversation. That's some of the, hey, Let's, you know, college basketball is a tough game. But if we're talking basketball, let's not just forget some of the simplicities of basketball. And I think that Caleb Love's got what you want in a two guard or in a combo guard right now. So I had to give him a shout out because, like I said, Zona's probably not Final Four bound. But I see it. I see it with Caleb Love. I do. Cooper Flagg is hoop. He might, you know, he's a contender to get multiple Who's Hoopins before anybody else does. But I don't have a crazy take for Cooper Flagg. I'm not going to go there right now. But I just think that Duke having the best front court in the nation by far in Flagg and Maluak, the 7'2" center freshman that was balling in the Olympics for South Sudan. I think that if you don't have an answer for that, you're not ready to stop the rest of the five-star recruits that they have. tall order. So I think they are the odds on favorites to win the title. And it's not a fun pick, but we could very well be saying that this is one of the best college rosters assembled in like the last 15 years. I squeezed 15 in there because I didn't want to get too aggressive, but this roster, if they go all the way, especially, I think this roster is pretty dirty. So I got some more Who's Hoopin's for you, man, because Devin Booker went ahead and hit a game winner tonight against Milwaukee, and I'm buying Devin Booker stock. I like the guy. I do. I'm a Devin Booker fan. Something about the intangibles during the Olympics made me say, all right, you know what? Nah, this guy gets it. Like, this guy does want to win. Every player isn't, you know, no one player gets it done. You need the support. You need the pieces. And you saw how close they got in 2021 with that Phoenix team that didn't need Kevin Durant, didn't need a second, you know, superstar. Chris Paul was, that was the final stretch of, you know, high-level Chris Paul. But we're not saying that him, Aiden, Cam Johnson, or Mikal Bridges were superstars. That was Devin Booker and company, 100%. And he still got company, but part of that company now is Kevin Durant. And I think that makes you have to take this Phoenix team a little bit more serious. But it comes back to Devin Booker. I've seen multiple high-level clutch performances out of Booker this year where he's either made the shot or been pivotal in opening up the guy who did hit the shot. And his playmaking is at a different level. Let me pull this up just for reference, but I believe he's like 25-8 or 25-9 or so for like the past month, and routinely getting assists, double doubles. So he's capable of doing a lot for a team, and they just, you know, you just need some of these surrounding pieces to kind of finish it off. And what do you know, 24.9 and 8.2 assists for the past month, along with, you know, 4.5 rebounds, getting to the line, hitting threes, you know, playing a fair bit of defense, not playing crazy defense, but Book, man, he's a prototypical two guard that I don't think any team in the league would, or any, you know, fan base in the league legitimately wouldn't want. So it's something I just had to admit. I said, you know what? I'm here on the fact that Devin Booker is a winning player. And I think we'll see him get very close to that, you know, apex again. I think that getting there as a youngin isn't something that he'll be content with not catching again. And honestly, his whole I'm staying in Phoenix forever thing was probably baloney, and just a nice, you know, positive face to not be problematic. And if a trade happens, it happens. It's business. Yeah, you know what I have on record. And I got to talk about the Clippers a little bit, man. I think the Clippers mean business. I think they mean business. And this is 2 points because it leads me to the next statement of, well, are they really? Or is OKC just that good? And the Clippers, to expand this, the best version of this team is right now as a roster. Norman Powell did a whole lot of heavy lifting to start the season. And, you know, he got a little hurt, got a little banged up, missed some time around the All-Star break, and he's back now. You didn't have Kawhi Leonard for much of the first portion of the season. Harden has been a constant. He's been constantly available, as has Zubac. That's one of the favorite things that I've talked about on this podcast multiple times is the relationship that Zubac and Harden developed quickly in LA. In this season, seeing the kind of player that Zuski is now, that's what I call him. I call him Zuski. I got him in fantasy. And this guy routinely, over the past month, Zubac is 20-12. 20-12, dude, with the block. Lakers gave this guy away, man, for Mike Muscala. Shooting 64% from the field on that 20-12. Oh, man. Zubac is a hooper, man. He definitely is, and Harden elevates, and they complement each other. They've got a fully healthy starting lineup where the fifth man is either, hey, Chris Dunn for defense or Derrick Jones Jr. for some size. They can pivot, right? they've now got a bench that is also, you know, you've got a full lineup on the bench. Take one of those, Chris Dunn or Derrick Jones, you put them next to A, and I'm not going to let y'all do that to Ben Simmons. Since Ben Simmons off the bench ain't bad. He really ain't bad. Bogdanovich was a very good get. I've got a lot of respect for Bogdanovich after watching that gold medal doc on Netflix. And having a veteran, you know, basketball enthusiast kind of player on the bench is going to matter. Going to matter in moments. I just think that, you know, Kawhi is also demonstrating that he's got maybe one more run in him, you know, of a scary Kawhi Leonard run. But Harden is doing the exact same thing as well. These guys are might be a hamstring away from the season unraveling also, which is always a scary thought. But with guys like, you know, Batum on the bench, Amir Coffey's been a hooper, very underrated hooper for some time now in L.A. And they even added Patty Mills. And they're legit 10 deep. They're 10-11 deep, and if you're going to get an outstanding performance from either Harden, Kawhi, Norm, or Zoo, or a combination of two 25-point type of nights, these guys can also play some defense. I just think that this team's legit. Tua Dome's a thing. I can't wait till I can get into a game there myself. But I think the Clippers could be the real deal. However, they still got handled by the Thunder in a game where they led most of the... They got handled by the Thunder almost wire to wire without Chet Holmgren or Jalen Williams. And the Thunder have overtaken the Cavs for the best record in the league now. They're starting to put some separation in between them. This is Oklahoma City team, dude. Dude, this is a team that you shouldn't feel like came out of nowhere. Because people have talked about them. But this is one of those statement seasons where a team really makes you wonder, like, damn, how good are they? Like, are they really going to keep doing this even in the postseason? And that's the million-dollar question. Will it translate for Oklahoma City? I'm led to believe that most of it will. In the back of my mind, I think that it falls short of an NBA Finals appearance. But that's getting harder and harder to see happening. The reason being, I think that they're going to have to make an adjustment. I think there's going to be an adjustment period in the postseason where they have to get used to the different whistle, to things being a little more feisty, to the stakes, to the atmosphere of a game 5, 6, and 7 of an elimination game, where them being the better team and them being, you know, a tighter unit probably gets them out of round one, no matter who they're facing. But once you have to do it against a veteran squad, once you have to do it against the Warriors, once you have to do it against the Nuggets, once you have to do it against possibly the Lakers, the Clippers possibly, dare I say, you know, teams like Memphis, they won't be scared of OKC. And teams like, dare I say, Phoenix, where it's like, look, we're playing 9 guys, tops just about. So Booker's always on the court. Jokic is always on the court. Are you going to out-chess the teams that have been there already and know when you just can't make certain mistakes and what possessions are must-have and what moments just have to go through? I think that they'll figure that out for a round or two, and eventually the other team is able to click into that gear with more familiarity, more poise, more execution than Oklahoma City is going to be able to, because they're going to be very, very reliant on SGA. And I just think that in the postseason, the attack not being balanced enough isn't going to work against a balanced team that has some level of deep playoff experience along with the roster that can, you know, just compete with these guys. So that's how I feel. And that's what I think, I guess, but that's more so what I think. But I feel like this OKC team is also capable of just running the table at the same time, because that was actually my first article. My first two articles this season were about Cleveland and OKC, and those narratives have been unwavering throughout the season. Knowing how things go once you get to late April and June, Don't get me started on June. Actually, I bypassed May. Once we get to May, it's different, brother. It's different. It took Jason Tatum 7-8 years to get, you know, to the finals 2 times, but he got to the second round every time. So we're talking about just getting over that baby hump. Not even, so it's clearly not a baby hump, but getting from round 2 success and conference final success to the final stage took Brown and Tatum 7-8 years. I don't think that OKC does it yet. I don't. That's not what history would suggest, but we shall see. Will it translate? We shall see. I'm going to wrap it up there just about, man. And we appreciate you guys always for listening. And since y'all did, I'm going to go ahead and give you my last Who's Hooping. Bronny, yo. I was not afraid to speak objectively about Bronny on this podcast. Leading up to the draft, summer league, regular season, I said, yo, this dude's an athlete. We have to understand that he had a cardiac event a month before, you know, that when he was making his NBA debut, he was less than a year removed from a cardiac event, you know, roughly a year. So let's allow time to do its thing. It's one of my favorite sayings in regards to just some time to separate himself from that. Kid's turning 20, 21 still. Like, it's a lot going on for him in between his ears. But I said, yo, this dude's an athlete, bro. And I watch his game. He's not an arrogant type of guy. He's not a team killer. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's actually pretty unselfish and can play within the flow of a team. Okay. Then you say, okay, well, how are the, you know, hey, there's some ball handling. Okay, yeah, there's some passing. Yeah, there's a little bit of shot making. The shot making is going to, you know, be a graph of ups and downs, but there are signs of shot making. And we can't ignore the fact that he is playing better than almost all of the rookies who have been assigned to the G League or made appearances in the G League this season. Laugh at it if you want to. If you're doing actual analysis of who is performing in the G League and who looks league ready in the G League, you can't objectively do that and not say that Bronny does. Doesn't. And what I've said about the Lakers' treatment of it, 2 things. I said that, A, before he even touches the court, he's making this team better in the form of accountability for LeBron James Sr. Having LeBron owns, dude, having your son on the team, bro, whatever, however you feel about it, I don't know if you can imagine how it would feel as that pop, unless like you're that in that situation. But imagine that, dude. Like, as a parent, you just kind of always, there's nothing you would want to do more than to just know your kids always all right, you know. Thank God if you got a good relationship with them, that they're your best freaking friend, dude. It's a friend that you created. And I've got a whole another hour's worth of parent opinions and dad thoughts as of late. For him to have the luxury of seeing that his son is successful and working alongside him and allowing his namesake to build a legacy of his own and play a part in it. So gratifying, dude. It goes beyond what anything on the court could mean. It goes beyond anything basketball related. It's so much more satisfying. And I'm only speaking to that as dad. Y'all know what time it is. And as a parent, you realize you can't start holding your kids more accountable than you're going to hold yourself. And or else you're just a hypocrite and you got to face the music. You got to be real about that to yourself. And I said this on JB's Ticket, Vegas Scoreboard Express last summer before the season started, that hey, Bronny following this dude around in the locker room is going to give us a better version of LeBron. Look at this damn LeBron at 40 years old, averaging 28, 8, and 8 like he has for the last 20 years. It's because, yeah, you know what, man? Life's good. Life's good right now. Let's play some ball. I'm ready to shoot. You know what I mean? So Bronny's spot. I don't think anybody's making that correlation into how LeBron's doing it this year. Trust me. Trust me. That makes his life a whole lot easier and gives him a lot more. Whatever y'all want to say, he sleeps fine tonight, I bet. And that secondly, hey, Lakers, man, y'all drafted the kid. You're going to treat him like a gimmick. It's going to be a gimmick. And if you take it seriously and you don't shy away from what somebody got to say, you do your due diligence in giving him time to go out there, perform without pressures of there's going to be immediate consequences. You'll get a sample size that you can really work with. And we saw that on the court the other night against whoever it was when he had a team high 17, 18. We saw it again tonight in the G League. Yeah, 39 tonight. I'm looking at it, bro. I'm like, yo, stop treating it like a gimmick. The kid's got some skill. The same way that Dalton Connect balled out for like 9 days and had a whole press run. He just had opportunity and applied some confidence that I think Bronny is now finding through these reps that he's built at the G League schedule that is translating to the NBA. And you know what, man? I think the NBA is handling this thing right, bro. I mean, I think the Lakers are handled it right. Yeah, Bronny, we're not going to send you to every G League gym in the country. No. We're going to play you right here in L.A., where the fam is at the game, where fans are actually rooting for you, where we can control the environment a little bit and still go travel with the team. That kid's putting his work in, bro. Knock it off, man. Knock it off. So that's my two cents on that. There's plenty more to say, man. There's plenty more to get into, and I'm going to just leave it at that because we're going to be back on here very, very shortly to continue this thing. Like I said, we are in bi-weekly drop territory. Trust me. Like, follow, and subscribe wherever you are listening, however you're listening. Thank you for listening. As always, till next time.